honoured if the Maester would sit here beside me, Your Grace.
As you will.
Lord Stannis turned away to say something to Melisandre, who had seated herself at his right hand in the place of high honour. Lady Selyse was on his left, flashing a smile as bright and brittle as her jewels.
Too far, Cresson thought dully, looking at where Sir Davos was seated. Half of the Lord's bannermen were between the smuggler and the high table. I must be closer to her if I am to get the strangler into her cup. Yet how?
Patchface was capering about as the maester made his slow way around the table to Davos Seaworth.
Here we eat fish,
the fool declared happily, waving a cod about like a scepter.
Under the sea, the fish eat us. I know, oh ho ho.
Sir Davos moved aside to make room on the bench.
We all should be in Motley tonight,
he said gloomily as Cressin seated himself,
for this is fool's business we're about. The Red Woman has seen victory in her flames, so Stannis means to press his claim, no matter what the numbers. Before she's done, we're all like to see what Patchface saw, I fear. The bottom of the sea.
Cresson slid his hands up into his sleeves as if for warmth. His fingers found the hard lumps the crystals made in the wool.
Lord Stannis.
Stannis turned from the Red Woman, but it was Lady Selyse who replied.
King Stannis, you forget yourself, maester.
He is old. His mind wanders, the king told her gruffly. What is it, Cresson? Speak your mind.
As you intend to sail, it is vital that you make common cause with Lord Stark and Lady Arryn.
I make common cause with no one, Stannis Baratheon said.
No more than light makes common cause with darkness,
Lady Selyse took his hand. Stannis nodded.
The Starks seek to steal half my kingdom, even as the Lannisters have stolen my throne and my own sweet brother, the swords and service and strongholds that are mine by rights. They're all usurpers, and they're all my enemies.
I have lost him,
Cresson thought, despairing. If only he could somehow approach Melisandre unseen. He needed but an instant's access to her cup.
You are the rightful heir to your brother, Robert, the true lord of the Seven Kingdoms, and king of the Andals, the Rhoynar, and the First Men, he said desperately. But even so, you cannot hope to triumph without allies. He has an ally, Lady Selyse said. R'hllor, the Lord of Light, the Heart of Fire, the God of Flame and Shadow. Gods make uncertain allies at best, the old man insisted. And that one has no power here.
You think not?
The ruby at Melisandre's throat caught the light as she turned her head, and for an instant it seemed to glow bright as the comet.
If you speak such folly, Maester, you ought to wear your crown again.
Yes, Lady Selyse agreed. Patch's helm. It suits you well, old man. Put it on again, I command you. Under the sea, no one wears hats, Patchface said. I know, oh-ho!
Lord Stannis' eyes were shadowed beneath his heavy brow, his mouth tight as his jaw worked silently. He always ground his teeth when he was angry.
Fool, he growled at last. My lady wife commands. Give Cresson your helm.
No, the old maester thought. This is not you. Not your way. You are always just, always hard, yet never cruel, never. You did not understand mockery, no more than you understood laughter.
Patchface danced closer, his cowbells ringing.
Clang-a-dang, ding-ding, cling-clang, cling-clank.
The maester sat silent while the fool set the antlered bucket on his brow. Cresson bowed his head beneath the weight. His bells clanged.
Perhaps he ought to sing his counsel henceforth, Lady Selyse said.
You go too far, woman, Lord Stannis said. He's an old man, and he served me well.
And I will serve you to the last, my sweet lord, my poor, lonely son, Cresson thought, for suddenly he saw the way.
Sir Davos' cup was before him, still half full of sour red. He found a hard flake of crystal in his sleeve, held it tight between thumb and forefinger as he reached for the cup.
Smooth motions, deft. I must not fumble now,
he prayed, and the gods were kind. In the blink of an eye, his fingers were empty. His hands had not been so steady for years, nor half so fluid. Davos saw, but no one else, he was certain. Cup in hand, he rose to his feet.
Mayhaps I have been a fool, Lady Melisande. Will you share a cup of wine with me? A cup in honor of your god, your lord of light? A cup to toast his power?
The red woman studied him. If you wish. He could feel them all watching him. Davos clutched at him as he left the bench, catching his sleeve with the fingers that Lord Stannis had shortened.
What are you doing?
He whispered.
A thing that must be done, Maester Cresson answered, for the sake of the realm and the soul of my lord.
He shook off Davos's hand, spilling a drop of wine on the rushes. She met him beneath the high table, with every man's eyes upon them. But Cresson saw only her. Red silk, red eyes, the ruby red at her throat, red lips curled in a faint smile as she put a hand atop his own around the cup. Her skin felt hot, feverish. It is not too late to spill the wine, Maester.
No,
he whispered hoarsely.
No.
As you will.
Melisande of Achaïe took the cup from his hands and drank long and deep. There was only half a swallow of wine remaining when she offered it back to him.
And now you.
His hands were shaking, but he made himself bestrung. A maester of the citadel must not be afraid. The wine was sour on his tongue. He let the empty cup drop from his fingers to shatter on the floor.
He does have power here, my lord, the woman said, and fire cleanses.
At her throat, the ruby shimmered redly. Cresson tried to reply, but his words caught in his throat. His cough became a terrible thin whistle as he strained to suck in air. Iron fingers tightened around his neck. As he sank to his knees, still he shook his head, denying her power, denying her magic, denying her god. And the cowbells pealed in his antlers, singing,
Fool! Fool! Fool!
While the red woman looked down on him in pity, the candle flames dancing in her red, red eyes. Arya. At Winterfell, they had called her Arya Horseface, and she thought nothing could be worse. But that was before the orphan boy, Lummy Greenhands, had named her Lumpy Head. Her head felt lumpy when she touched it. When Yoren had dragged her into that alley, she thought he meant to kill her. But the sour old man had only held her tight, sawing through her mats and tangles with his dagger. She remembered how the breeze sent the fistfuls of dirty brown hair skittering across the paving stones towards the sept where her father had died.
I'm taking men and boys from the city,
Yoren growled as a sharp steel scraped at her head.
Now you hold still, boy.
By the time he had finished, her scalp was nothing but tufts and stubble. Afterwards, he told her that from there to Winterfell, she'd be Arry the Orphan Boy.
Gate shouldn't be hard, but the road's another matter. You've got a long way to go in bad company.
I got 30 this time. Men and boys all bound for the wall. And don't be thinking they're like that bastard brother of yours. He shook her. Lord Eddard gave me pick of the dungeons, but I didn't find no little lordlings down there. This lot, half of them, would turn you over to the Queen, quick as spit for a pardon and maybe a few silvers. The other half will do the same, only they'd rape you first. So you keep to yourself and make your water in the woods alone. That'll be the hardest part, the pissing. So don't drink no more than you need.
Leaving King's Landing was easy, just like he'd said. The Lannister guardsmen on the gate were stopping everyone, but Yoren called out one by name, and their wagons were waved through. No one spared Arya a glance. They were looking for a high-born girl, daughter of the king's hand, not for a skinny boy with his hair chopped off. Arya never looked back. She wished the rush would rise and wash the whole city away, Flea Bottom and the Red Keep and the Great Sept and everything, and everyone too, especially Prince Joffrey and his mother. But she knew it wouldn't. And anyhow, Sansa was still in the city and would wash away too. When she remembered that, Arya decided to wish for Winterfell instead. Yoren was wrong about the pissing, though. That wasn't the hardest part at all. Lummy green hands and hot pie were the hardest part. Orphan boys. Yoren had plucked some from the streets, with promises of food for their bellies and shoes for their feet. The rest he'd found in chains.
The watch needs good men, he told them as they set out, but you lot will have to do.
Yoren had taken grown men from the dungeons as well, thieves and poachers and rapers and the like. The worst were the three he'd found in the back cells, who must have scared even him, because he kept them fettered hand and foot in the back of a wagon and vowed they'd stay in irons all the way to the wall. One had no nose, only the hole in his face where it had been cut off, and the gross, fat, bald one, with the pointed teeth and the weeping sores on his cheeks, had eyes like nothing human. They took 5 wagons out of King's Landing, laden with supplies for the wall, hides and bolts of cloth, bars of pig iron, a cage of ravens, books and papers and ink, a baleful of sour leaf, jars of oil, and chests of medicine and spices. Teams of plough horses pulled the wagons, and Yoren had bought 2 courses and a 6 donkeys for the boys. Arya would have preferred a real horse, but the donkey was better than riding on a wagon. The men paid her no mind, but she was not so lucky with the boys. She was 2 years younger than the youngest orphan, not to mention smaller and skinnier. And Lummy and Hot Pie took her silence to mean she was scared or stupid or deaf.
Look at that sword Lumpyhead's got there, Lummy said one morning as they made their plodding way past orchards and wheat fields.
He had been a dyer's apprentice before he was caught stealing, and his arms were mottled green to the elbow. When he laughed, he brayed like the donkeys they were riding.
Where's a gutter rat like Lumpyhead? Get him a sword.
Arya chewed her lip sullenly. She could see the back of Yoren's faded black cloak up ahead of the wagons, but she was determined not to go crying to him for help.
Maybe he's a little squire, Hot Pie put in.
His mother had been a baker before she died, and he'd pushed her cart through the streets all day shouting, Hot pies! Hot pies!
Some lordy lord's little squire boy, that's it. He ain't no squire, look at him. I'll bet that's not even a real sword. I bet that's just some play sword made of tin.
Arya hated them, making fun of Needle. It's Castle Forge steel, you stupid, she snapped, turning in the saddle to glare at them.
And you better shut your mouth.
The orphan boys hooted.
Where'd you get your blade like that, Lumpy Face?
Hot Pie wanted to know.
Lumpy Head, corrected Lummy. He probably stole it.
I did not,
she shouted. Jon Snow had given her Needle. Maybe she had to let them call her Lumpy Head, but she wasn't going to let them call Jon a thief.
If he stole it, we could take it off him,
said Hot Pie. It's not his, anyhow. I could use me a sword like that.
Lummy egged him on.
Go on, take it off him, I dare you.
Hot Pie kicked his donkey, riding closer.
Hey, lumpy face, you give me that sword.
His hair was the colour of straw, his fat face all sunburnt and peeling.
You don't know how to use it.
Yes, I do, Aryo could have said. I killed a boy, a fat boy like you. I stabbed him in the belly and he died. And I'll kill you too, if you don't let me alone. Only she did not dare. Yorin didn't know about the stable boy, but she was afraid of what he might do if he found out. Aryo was pretty sure that some of the other men were killers too, the three in the manacles for sure. But the queen wasn't looking for them, so it wasn't the same.
Look at him, brayed Lummy Greenhands. I'll bet he's going to cry now. You want to cry, lumpyhead?
She had cried in her sleep the night before, dreaming of her father. Come morning, she'd woken red-eyed and dry and could not have shed another tear if her life had hung on it.
He's going to wet his pants,
Hot Pie suggested.
Leave him be,
said the boy with the shaggy black hair who rode behind them. Lummy had named him the Bull on account of this horned helm he had that he polished all the time but never wore. Lummy didn't dare mock the Bull. He was older and big for his age, with a broad chest and strong-looking arms.
You'd better give Hot Pie the sword, Harry, Lummy said. Hot Pie wants it bad. He kicked a boy to death. He'll do the same to you, I'll bet. I knocked him down, and I kicked him in the balls, and I kept kicking him there until he was dead.
Hot Pie boasted.
I kicked him all to pieces. His balls were broken open and bloody, and his cock turned black. You better give me the sword.
Aria slid her practice sword from her belt. You can have this one, she told Hot Pie, not wanting to fight.
That's just some stick.
He rode nearer and tried to reach over for Needle's hilt. Aria made the stick whistle as she laid the wood across the donkey's hindquarters. The animal hawed and bucked, dumping Hot Pie on the ground. She vaulted off her own donkey and poked him in the gut as he tried to get up, and he sat back down with a grunt. Then she whacked him across the face and his nose made a crack like a branch breaking. Blood dribbled from his nostrils. When Hot Pie began to wail, Aryo whirled towards Lummy Greenhands, who was sitting on his donkey open-mouthed. You want some sword too? She yelled, but he didn't. He raised dyed green hands in front of his face and squealed to her to get away. The Bull shouted,
Behind you!
And Aria spun. Hot Pie was on his knees, his fist closing around a big jagged rock. She let him throw it, ducking her head as it sailed past. Then she flew at him. He raised a hand, and she hit it, and then his cheek, and then his knee. He grabbed for her, and she danced aside, and bounced the wood off the back of his head. He fell down and got up and stumbled after her, his red face all smeared with dirt and blood. Aria slid into a water dancer's stance and waited. When he came close enough, she lunged right between his legs, so hard that if her wooden sword had had a point, it would have come out between his butt cheeks. By the time Yoren pulled her off him, Hot Pie was sprawled out on the ground with his breeches brown and smelly, crying as Aria whapped him over and over and over.
Enough,
the black brother roared, prying the stick sword from her fingers.
You want to kill a fool?
When Lummy and some others started to squeal, the old man turned on them too.
Shut your mouths, or I'll be shutting them for you. Any more of this, I'll tie you up behind the wagons and drag you to the wall. He spat. And that goes twice for you, Harry. You come with me, boy, now.
They were all looking at her, even the three chained and manacled in the back of the wagon. The fat one snapped his pointy teeth together and hissed, but Aria ignored him. The old man dragged her well off the road into a tangle of trees, cursing and muttering all the while.
If I had a thimble of sense, I would have left you in King's Landing,
You hear me, boy?
He always snarled that word, putting a bite in it, so that she would be certain to hear.
Unlace your breeches and pull them down. Go on. There's no one here to see. Do it.
Sullenly, Arya did as he said.
Over there against the oak. Yes, like that.
She wrapped her arms around the trunk and pressed her face to the rough wood.
You scream now. You scream loud.
I won't, Arya thought stubbornly. But when Yoren laid the wood across the back of her bare thighs, the shriek burst out of her anyway.
Think that hurt, he said. Try this one.
The stick came whistling. Arya shrieked again, clutching the tree to keep from falling.
One more.
She held on tight, chewing her lip, flinching when she heard it coming. The stroke made her jump and howl. I won't cry, she thought. I won't do that. I'm a Stark of Winterfell. Our sigil is the direwolf. Direwolves don't cry. She could feel a thin trickle of blood running down her left leg. Her thighs and cheeks were ablaze with pain.
Maybe I got your attention now, Yoren said. Next time you take that stick to one of your brothers, you get twice what you give. You hear me? Now, cover yourself.
They're not my brothers, Arya thought, as she bent to yank up her breeches. But she knew better than to say so. Her hands fumbled with her belt and laces. Yoren was looking at her.
You hurt.
Calm as still water, she told herself, the way Cyrio Forel had taught her. Some. He spat.
That pie boy's hurting worse. It wasn't him as killed your father, girl. Nor that thieving lummy, neither. Hitting them won't bring him back.
I know, Arya muttered sullenly.
Here's something you didn't know. It wasn't supposed to happen like it did. I was set to leave, wagons bought and loaded, and a man comes with a boy for me and a purse of coin and a message. Never mind who it's from. Lord Eddard's to take the Blackishes to me wake. He'll be going with you. Why do you think I was there? Only something went queer.
Joffrey, Arya breathed. Someone should kill him.
Someone will. But it won't be me, nor you neither.
Yoren tossed back her stick sword.
Got Sarleaf back at the wagons, he said as they made their way back to the road. You chew some. It'll help with the sting.
It did help, some, though the taste of it was foul, and it made her spit look like blood. Even so, she walked for the rest of that day, and the day after, and the day after that, too raw to sit on a donkey. Hot Pie was worse off. Yoren had to shift some barrels around so he could lie in the back of a wagon on some sacks of barley, and he whimpered every time the wheels hit a rock. Lummy Greenhands wasn't even hurt, yet he stayed as far away from Arya as he could get.
Every time you look at him, he twitches, the bull told her as she walked beside his donkey.
She did not answer. It seemed safer not to talk to anyone. That night, she lay upon her thin blanket on the hard ground, staring up at the great red comet. The comet was splendid and scary all at once.
The Red Sword, the bull named it.
He claimed it looked like a sword, the blade still red hot from the forge. When Arya squinted the right way, she could see the sword too. Only it wasn't a new sword. It was ice, her father's great sword, all ripply Valyrian steel, and the red was Lord Eddard's blood on the blade after Sir Ilion, the king's justice, had cut off his head. Yoren had made her look away when it happened, yet it seemed to her that the comet looked like ice must have after. When at last she slept, she dreamed of home. The King's Road wound its way past Winterfell on its way to the Wall, and Yoren had promised he'd leave her there with no one any wiser about who she'd been. She yearned to see her mother again, and Rob, and Bran, and Rickon, but it was Jon Snow she thought of most. She wished somehow they could come to the wall before Winterfell. So John might muss up her hair and call her Little Sister. She'd tell him, I missed you, and he'd say it too at the very same moment, the way they always used to say things together. She would have liked that. She would have liked that better than anything. Sansa. The morning of King Joffrey's name day dawned bright and windy, with the long tail of the great comet visible through the high, scuttling clouds. Sansa was watching it from her tower window when Sir Aerys Oakheart arrived to escort her down to the tawny grounds. What do you think it means? She asked him. Glory to your betrothed, Sir Aerys answered at once. See how it flames across the sky today on his grace's name day, as if the gods themselves had raised a banner in his honor. The small folk have named it King Joffrey's Comet. Doubtless that was what they told Joffrey. Sansa was not so sure. I've heard servants calling it the dragon's tail. King Joffrey sits where Aegon the dragon once sat, in the castle built by his son, Sir Aerys said. He is the dragon's heir, and crimson is the colour of House Lannister, another sign. This comet is sent to herald Joffrey's ascent to his throne, I have no doubt. It means that he will triumph over his enemies. Is it true, she wondered? Would the guards be so cruel? Her mother was one of Joffrey's enemies now. Her brother Rob, another. Her father had died by the king's command. Must Rob and her lady mother die next? The comet was red. But Joffrey was Baratheon as much as Lannister, and their sigil was a black stag on a golden field. Shouldn't the guards have sent Joff a golden comet? Sansa closed the shutters and turned sharply away from the window. You look very lovely today, my lady, Sir Aerys said. Thank you, sir. Knowing that Joffrey would require her to attend the tourney in his honor, Sansa had taken special care with her face and clothes. She wore a gown of pale purple silk and a moonstone hairnet that had been a gift from Joffrey. The gown had long sleeves to hide the bruises on her arms. Those were Joffrey's gifts as well. When they told him that Rob had been proclaimed king in the north, his rage had been a fearsome thing, and he had sent Sir Boris to beat her. Shall we go? Sir Aerys offered his arm, and she let him lead her from her chamber. If she must have one of the king's guard dogging her steps, Sansa preferred that it be him. Sir Boris was short-tempered, Sir Meryn cold, and Sir Mandon's strange dead eyes made her uneasy, while Sir Preston treated her like a lackwit child. Aerys Oakheart was courteous and would talk to her cordially. Once he even objected when Joffrey commanded him to hit her. He did hit her in the end, but not hard, as Sir Meryn or Sir Boris might have, and at least he had argued. The others obeyed without question, except for the Hound. But Joff never asked the Hound to punish her. He used the other five for that. Sir Aerys had light brown hair and a face that was not unpleasant to look upon. Today he made quite the dashing figure, with his white silk cloak fastened at the shoulder by a golden leaf, and a spreading oak tree worked upon the breast of his tunic in shining gold thread. Who do you think will win the day's honors? Sansa asked, as they descended the steps arm in arm. I will, Sir Aerys answered, smiling. Yet I fear the triumph will have no savour. This will be a small field and poor. No more than 20 will enter the lists, including squires and free riders. There is small honour in unhorsing green boys. The last tourney had been different, Sansa reflected. King Robert had staged it in her father's honour. High lords and fabled champions had come from all over the realm to compete, and the whole city had turned out to watch. She remembered the splendor of it, the field of pavilions along the river with a knight's shield hung before each door, the long rows of silken pennants waving in the wind, the gleam of sunlight on bright steel and gilded spurs. The days had rung to the sound of trumpets and pounding hooves, and the night had been full of feasts and song. Those had been the most magical days of her life, but they seemed a memory from another age now. Robert Baratheon was dead, and her father as well, beheaded for a traitor on the steps of the great sept of Baelor. Now there were three kings in the land, and war raged beyond the Trident while the city filled with desperate men. Small wonder that they had to hold Joff's tournament behind the thick stone walls of the Red Keep. Will the Queen attend, do you think? Sansa always felt safer when Cersei was there to restrain her son.
I fear not, my lady. The council is meeting. Some urgent business.
Sir Aerys dropped his voice.
Lord Tywin has gone to ground at Harrenhal instead of bringing his army to the city, as the Queen commanded. Her Grace is furious.
He fell silent as a column of Lannister guardsmen marched past, in crimson cloaks and lion-crested helms. Sir Aerys was fond of gossip, but only when he was certain that no one was listening. The carpenters had erected a gallery and lists in the outer bailey. It was a poor thing indeed, and the meagre throng that had gathered to watch filled but half the seats. Most of the spectators were guardsmen in the gold cloaks of the city watch, or the crimson of House Lannister. Of lords and ladies, there were but a paltry few, the handful that remained at court. Grey-faced Lord Giles Rusby was coughing into a square of pink silk. Lady Tender was bracketed by her daughters, Placid Dull Lollies and acid-tongued Felissa. Ebon's kin Jalabar Zo was an exile who had no other refuge. Lady Emma Sande, a babe, seated on her wet nurse's lap. The talk was she would soon be wed to one of the Queen's cousins, so the Lannisters might claim her lands. The king was shaded beneath a crimson canopy, one leg thrown negligently over the carved wooden arm of his chair. Princess Marcella and Prince Tommen sat behind him. In the back of the royal box, Sander Clegane stood at guard, his hands resting on his sword belt. The white cloak of the king's guard was draped over his broad shoulders and fastened with a jewel brooch, the snowy cloth looking somehow unnatural against his brown, rough-spun tunic and studded leather jerkin.
Lady Sansa,
the hound announced curtly when he saw her. His voice was as rough as the sound of a saw on wood. The burnt scars in his face and throat made one side of his mouth twitch when he spoke. Princess Marcella nodded a shy greeting at the sound of Sansa's name, but plump little Prince Tommen jumped up eagerly.
Sansa, did you hear? I'm to ride in a tourney today. Mother said I could.
Tommen was all of eight. He reminded her of her own little brother, Bran. They were of an age. Bran was back at Winterfell, a cripple, yet safe. Sansa would have given anything to be with him. I fear for the life of your foeman, she told Tommen solemnly.
His foeman will be stuffed with straw, Joff said as he rose.
The king was clad in a gilded breastplate with a roaring lion engraved upon its chest, as if he expected the war to engulf them at any moment. He was 13 today, and tall for his age, with the green eyes and golden hair of the Lannisters. Your Grace, she said, dipping in a curtsy. Sir Aerys bowed.
Pray pardon me, Your Grace. I must equip myself for the lists.
Joffrey waved a curt dismissal while he studied Sansa from head to heels.
I'm pleased you wore my stones.
So the king had decided to play the gallant today. Sansa was relieved. I thank you for them, and for your tender words. I pray you a lucky name day, Your Grace.
Sit,
Joff commanded, gesturing her to the empty seat beside his own.
Have you heard? The Beggar King is dead.
Who? For a moment, Sansa was afraid he meant Rob.
Viserys, the last son of Mad King Aerys, has been going about the Free Cities since before I was born, calling himself a king. Well, Mother says the Dothraki finally crowned him with molten gold.
He laughed.
That's funny, don't you think? The dragon was their sigil. It's almost as good as if some wolf killed your traitor brother. Maybe I'll feed him to the wolves after I've caught him. Did I tell you? I intend to challenge him to single combat.
I should like to see that, Your Grace. More than you know. Sansa kept her tone cool and polite. Yet even so, Joffrey's eyes narrowed as he tried to decide whether she was mocking him. Will you enter the list today? She asked quickly. The king frowned.
My lady mother said it was not fitting, since the tourney is in my honor. Otherwise, I would have been champion. Isn't that so, dog?
The hound's mouth twitched.
Against this lot?
Why not?
He had been the champion in her father's tourney, Sansa remembered. Will you joust today, my lord? She asked him. Clegane's voice was thick with contempt.
Wouldn't be worth the bother of arming myself. This is a tourney of gnats.
The king laughed.
My dog has a fierce bark. Perhaps I should command him to fight the day's champion. To the death.
Joffrey was fond of making men fight to the death.
You'd be one knight the poorer.
The hound had never taken a knight's vows. His brother was a knight, and he hated his brother. A blare of trumpets sounded. The king settled back in his seat and took Sansa's hand. Once that would have sent her heart to pounding, but that was before he had answered her plea for mercy by presenting her with her father's head. His touch filled her with revulsion now, but she knew better than to show it. She made herself sit very still.
Sir Meriyn Trant of the King's Guard,
a herald called. Sir Meriyn entered from the west side of the yard, clad in gleaming white plate, chased with gold, and mounted on a milk-white charger with a flowing grey mane. His cloak streamed behind him like a field of snow. He carried a 12-foot lance.
Sir Hobber of House Red Wine of the Arbor,
the herald sang. Sir Hobber trotted in from the east, riding a black stallion caparisoned in burgundy and blue. His lance was striped in the same colors, and his shield bore the grape cluster sigil of his house. The Red Wine twins were the queen's unwilling guests, even as Sansa was. She wondered whose notion it had been for them to ride in Joffrey's tourney. Not their own, she thought. At a signal from the master of revels, the combatants couched their lances and put their spurs to their mounts. There were shouts from the watching guardsmen and the lords and ladies in the gallery. The knights came together in the center of the yard with a great shock of wood and steel. The white lance and the striped one exploded in splinters within a second of each other. Hobber Redwine reeled at the impact, yet somehow managed to keep his seat. Wheeling their horses about at the far end of the lists, the knights tossed down their broken lances and accepted replacements from the squires. Sir Horace Redwine, Sir Hobber's twin, shouted encouragement to his brother. But on their second pass, Sir Meriyn swung the point of his lance to strike Sir Hobber in the chest, driving him from the saddle to crash resoundingly to the earth. Sir Horace cursed and ran out to help his battered brother from the field.
Poorly ridden, declared King Joffrey. Sir Balon Swan of Stone Elm in a red watch,
came the herald's cry. Wide white wings ornamented Sir Balon's great helm, and black and white swans fought on his shield.
Morris of House Slint, heir to Lord Janus of Harrenhal. Look at that up-jumped oaf,
Joff hooted, loud enough for half the yard to hear. Morris, a mere squire, and a new made squire at that, was having difficulty managing lance and shield. The lance was a knight's weapon, Sansa knew, the Slint's low-born. Lord Janus had been no more than commander of the City Watch before Joffrey had raised him to Harrenhal and the Council. I hope he falls and shames himself, she thought bitterly. I hope Sir Balon kills him. When Joffrey proclaimed her father's death, it had been Janus Slint who seized Lord Eddard's severed head by the hair and raised it on high for king and crowd to behold, while Sansa wept and screamed. Morris wore a checkered black and gold cloak over black armor inlaid with gold scrollwork. On his shield was a bloody spear his father had chosen as a sigil of their new-made house. But he did not seem to know what to do with the shield as he urged his horse forward, and Sir Balin's point struck the blazoned square. Morris dropped his lance, fought for balance, and lost. One foot caught in a stirrup as he fell, and the runaway charger dragged the youth to the end of the lists, head bouncing against the ground. Joff hooted derision. Sansa was appalled, wondering if the guards had heard her vengeful prayer. But when they disentangled Morris Slynt from his horse, they found him bloodied but alive.
"Tommen, we picked the wrong foe for you,"
the king told his brother.
"The Straw Knight jousts better than that one."
Next came Sir Horace Redwine's turn. He fared better than his twin, vanquishing an elderly knight whose mount was bedecked with silver griffins against a striped blue and white field. Splendid as he looked, the old man made a poor contest of it. Joffrey curled his lip.
"This is a feeble show."
"I warned you," said the hound.
"Nats."
The king was growing bored. It made Sansa anxious. She lowered her eyes and resolved to keep quiet no matter what. When Joffrey Baratheon's mood darkened, any chance word might set off one of his rages.
"Lothar Brune, free rider in the service of Lord Baelish," cried the herald. "Sir Duntus the Red of House Hollard."
The free rider, a small man in dented plate without device, duly appeared at the west end of the yard. But of his opponent there was no sign. Finally, a chestnut stallion trotted into view in a swirl of crimson and scarlet silks. But Sir Duntus was not on it. The knight appeared a moment later, cursing and staggering, clad in breastplate and plumed helm and nothing else. His legs were pale and skinny, and his manhood flopped about obscenely as he chased after his horse. The watchers roared and shouted insults. Catching his horse by the bridle, Sir Duntus tried to mount, but the animal would not stand still, and the knight was so drunk that his bare foot kept missing the stirrup. By then, the crowd was howling with laughter, all but the king. Joffrey had a look in his eyes that Sansa remembered well, the same look he'd had of the great sept of Baelor the day he pronounced death on Lord Eddard Stark. Finally, Sir Duntus the Red gave it up for a bad job, sat down in the dirt, and removed his plumed helm.
"I lose," he shouted. "Fetch me some wine."
The king stood.
"A cask from the cellars. I'll see him drowned in it."
Sansa heard herself gasp.
"No, you can't."
Joffrey turned his head.
"What did you say?"
Sansa could not believe she had spoken. Was she mad? To tell him no in front of half the court? She hadn't meant to say anything, only Sir Duntus was drunken and silly and useless, but he meant no harm.
"Did you say I can't? Did you?"
"Please," Sansa said. "I only meant it would be ill luck, your grace, to kill a man on your name day."
"You're lying," Joffrey said. "I ought to drown you with him, if you care for him so much."
"I don't care for him, your grace." The words tumbled out desperately. "Drown him or have his head off, only kill him on the morrow, if you like, but please, not today, not on your name day. I couldn't bear for you to have ill luck. Terrible luck, even for kings. The singers all say so."
Joffrey scowled. He knew she was lying. She could see it. He would make her bleed for this.
"The girl speaks truly," the hound rasped. "What a man sows on his name day, he reaps throughout the year."
His voice was flat, as if he did not care a whit whether the king believed him or no. Could it be true? Sansa had not known. It was just something she'd said, desperate to avoid punishment. Unhappy, Joffrey shifted in his seat and flicked his fingers at Sir Duntus.
"Take him away. I'll have him killed on the morrow, the fool."
"He is," Sansa said, "a fool. You're so clever to see it. He's better fitted to be a fool than a knight, isn't he? You ought to dress him in motley and make him clown for you.
He doesn't deserve the mercy of a quick death. The king studied her for a moment.
Perhaps you're not so stupid as Mother says.
He raised his voice.
Did you hear, my lady, Dantas? From this day on, you're my new fool. You can sleep with Moonboy and dress in motley.
Sir Dantas, sobered by his near brush with death, crawled to his knees.
Thank you, Your Grace, and you, my lady, thank you.
As a brace of Lannister guardsmen led him off, the Master of Revels approached the box.
Your Grace, he said, shall I summon a new challenger for Brune or proceed with the next tilt? Neither. These are gnats, not knights. I'd have them all put to death, only it's my name day. The tourney is done. Get them all out of my sight.
The Master of Revels bowed, but Prince Tommen was not so obedient.
I'm supposed to ride against a straw man. Not today. But I want to ride. I don't care what you want.
Mother said I could ride.
She said, Princess Morella agreed. Mother said, mocked the king. Don't be childish.
We're children, Marcella declared haughtily. We're supposed to be childish. The hound laughed.
She has you there.
Joffrey was beaten.
Very well. Even my brother couldn't tilt any worse than these others. Master, bring out the Quinton. Tommen wants to be a gnat.
Tommen gave a shout of joy and ran off to be readied, his chubby little legs pumping hard.
Luck,
Sansa called to him.
They set up the Quinton at the far end of the lists, while the prince's pony was being saddled.
Tommen's opponent was a child-sized leather warrior stuffed with straw and mounted on a pivot, with a shield in one hand and a padded mace in the other. Someone had fastened a pair of antlers to the knight's head. Joffrey's father, King Robert, had worn antlers on his helm, Sansa remembered. But so did his uncle, Lord Renly, Robert's brother, who had turned traitor and crowned himself king. A pair of squires buckled the prince into his ornate silver and crimson armor. A tall plume of red feathers sprouted from the crest of his helm, and the line of Lannister and crown stag of Baratheon frolicked together on his shield. The squires helped him mount, and Sir Aaron Santagar, the Red Keep's master-at-arms, stepped forward and handed Tommen a blunted silver longsword with a leaf-shaped blade, crafted to fit an 8-year-old hand. Tommen raised the blade high.
Casterly rock,
he shouted in a high boyish voice as he put his heels into his pony and started across the hard-packed dirt at the Quinton. Lady Tender and Lord Giles started a ragged cheer, and Sansa added her voice to theirs. The king brooded in silence. Tommen got his pony up to a brisk trot, waved his sword vigorously, and spun the knight's shield a solid blow as it went by. The Quinton spun, the padded mace flying around to give the prince a mighty whack in the back of his head.
Tommen spilled from the saddle, his new armor rattling like a bag of old pots as he hit the ground. His sword went flying, his pony cantered away across the bailey, and a great gale of derision went up. King Joffrey laughed longest and loudest of all.
Oh,
Princess Marcella cried. She scrambled out of the box and ran to her little brother. Sansa found herself possessed of a queer, giddy courage.
You ought to go with her, she told the king. Your brother might be hurt.
Joffrey shrugged.
What if he is?
You should help him up and tell him how well he rode. Sansa could not seem to stop herself.
He got knocked off his horse and fell in the dirt, the king pointed out. That's not riding well.
Look, the hound interrupted. The boy has courage. He's going to try again.
They were helping Prince Tommen mount his pony.
If only Tommen were the elder instead of Joffrey, Sansa thought. I wouldn't mind marrying Tommen.
The sounds from the gatehouse took them by surprise. Chains rattled as the portcullis was drawn upward, and the great gates opened to the creak of iron hinges.
Who told them to open the gate?
Joff demanded. With the troubles in the city, the gates of the Red Keep had been closed for days. A column of riders emerged from beneath the portcullis, with a clink of steel and a clatter of hooves. Clegane stepped close to the king, one hand on the hilt of his longsword. The visitors were dinted and haggard and dusty, yet the standard they carried was the Lion of Lannister, golden on its crimson field. A few wore the red cloaks and mail of Lannister men-at-arms, but more were free riders and sellswords, armoured in oddments and bristling with sharp steel. And there were others, monstrous savages, out of one of old Nan's tales, the scary ones Bran used to love. They were clad in shabby skins and boiled leather, with long hair and fierce beards. Some wore blood-stained bandages over their brows or wrapped round their hands, and others were missing eyes, ears, and fingers. In their midst, riding on a tall red horse, in a strange high saddle that cradled him back and front, was the Queen's dwarf brother, Tyrion Lannister, the one they called the Imp. He'd let his beard grow to cover his pushed-in face until it was a bristly tangle of yellow and black hair, coarse as wire. Down his back flowed a shadowskin cloak, black fur striped with white. He held the reins in his left hand and carried his right arm in a white silk sling, but otherwise looked as grotesque as Sansa remembered from when he had visited Winterfell. With his bulging brow and mismatched eyes, he was still the ugliest man she had ever chanced to look upon. Yet Tommen put his spurs into his pony and galloped headlong across the yard, shouting with glee. One of the savages, a huge, shambling man, so hairy that his face was all but lost beneath his whiskers, scooped the boy out of his saddle, armor and all, and deposited him on the ground beside his uncle. Tommen's breathless laughter echoed off the walls as Tyrion clapped him on the backplate, and Sansa was startled to see that the two were of a height. Marcella came running after her brother, and the dwarf picked her up by the waist and spun her in a circle, squealing. When he lowered her back to the ground, the little man kissed her lightly on the brow and came waddling across the yard toward Joffrey. Two of his men followed close behind him, a black-haired, black-eyed sellsword who moved like a stalking cat, and a gaunt youth with an empty socket where one eye should have been. Tommen and Marcella trailed after them. The dwarf went to one knee before the king. "Your Grace." "You?" Joffrey said. "Me," the imp agreed, "although a more courteous greeting might be in order for an uncle and an elder." "They said you were dead," the hound said. The little man gave the big one a look. One of his eyes was green, one was black, and both were cool. "I was speaking to the king, not to his cur." "I'm glad you're not dead," said Princess Marcella. "We share that view, sweet child," Tyrion turned to Sansa. "My lady, I am sorry for your losses. Truly, the gods are cruel." Sansa could not think of a word to say to him. How could he be sorry for her losses? Was he mocking her? It wasn't the gods who'd been cruel. It was Joffrey. "I am sorry for your loss as well, Joffrey," the dwarf said. "What loss?" "Your royal father. A large, fierce man with a black beard. You'll recall him if you try. He was king before you."
"Oh, him. Yes, it was very sad. A boar killed him."
"Is that what they say, Your Grace?"
Joffrey frowned. Sansa felt she ought to say something. What was it that Septa Mordain used to tell her?
"Lady's armor is courtesy."
That was it. She donned her armor and said, "I'm sorry my lady mother took you captive, my lord."
"A great many people are sorry for that," Tyrion replied. "And before I am done, some may be a deal sorrier. Yet I thank you for the sentiment. Joffrey, where might I find your mother?"
"She's with my council," the king answered. "Your brother, Jaime, keeps losing battles."
He gave Sansa an angry look, as if it were her fault.
"He's been taken by the Starks, and we've lost Riverrun, and now her stupid brother is calling himself a king."
The dwarf smiled crookedly.
"All sorts of people are calling themselves kings these days."
Joff did not know what to make of that, though he looked suspicious and out of sorts.
Yes, well, I'm pleased you're not dead, Uncle. Did you bring me a gift for my name day?
I did. My wits.
I'd sooner have Rob Stark's head,
Joff said, with a sly glance at Sansa.
Tommen, Myrcella, come.
Sandor Clegane lingered behind a moment.
I'd guard that tongue of yours, little man, he warned, before he strode off after his liege.
Sansa was left with the dwarf and his monsters. She tried to think of what else she might say.
You hurt your arm, she managed at last.
One of your Northmen hit me with a morning star during the battle on the Green Fork. I escaped him by falling off my horse.
His grin turned into something softer as he studied her face.
Is it grief for your Lord Father that makes you so sad?
My father was a traitor, Sansa said at once, and my brother and Lady Mother are traitors as well. That reflex she had learned quickly. I am loyal to my beloved Joffrey.
No doubt, as loyal as a deer surrounded by wolves.
Lions, she whispered without thinking. She glanced about nervously, but there was no one close enough to hear. Lannister reached out and took her hand and gave it a squeeze.
I'm only a little lion, child, and I vow I shall not savage you.
Bowing, he said, but now you must excuse me. I have urgent business with Queen and Council. Sansa watched him walk off, his body swaying heavily from side to side with every step, like something from a grotesquerie. He speaks more gently than Joffrey, she thought. But the Queen spoke to me gently too. He's still a Lannister, her brother, and Joff's uncle, and no friend. Once she had loved Prince Joffrey with all her heart and admired and trusted his mother, the Queen. They had repaid that love and trust with her father's head. Sansa would never make that mistake again.
Tyrion. In the chilly white raiment of the King's Guard, Sir Mandon Moore looked like a corpse in a shroud.
Her Grace left orders. The council in session is not to be disturbed.
I would only be a small disturbance, sir. Tyrion slid the parchment from his sleeve. I bear a letter for my father, Lord Tywin Lannister, the Hand of the King. There is his seal.
Her Grace does not wish to be disturbed.
Sir Mandon repeated slowly, as if Tyrion were a dullard who had not heard him the first time. Jaime had once told him that Moore was the most dangerous of the King's Guard, excepting himself always, because his face gave no hint as to what he might do next. Tyrion would have welcomed a hint. Bronn and Tymit could likely kill the knight if it came to swords, but it would scarcely bode well if he began by slaying one of Joffrey's protectors. Yet if he let the man turn him away, where was his authority? He made himself smile.
Sir Mandon, you have not met my companions. This is Tymit, son of Tymit, a red hand of the burned men, and this is Brunn. Perchance you recall Sir Vardis Egan, who was captain of Lord Aaron's household guard.
I know the man.
Sir Mandon's eyes were pale grey, oddly flat and lifeless.
New,
Bronn corrected with a thin smile. Sir Mandon did not deign to show that he'd heard that.
Be that as it may, Tyrion said lightly, I truly must see my sister and present my letter, sir, if you would be so kind as to open the door for us.
The White Knight did not respond. Tyrion was almost at the point of trying to force his way past when Sir Mandon abruptly stood aside.
You may enter. They may not.
A small victory, he thought, but sweet. He had passed his first test. Tyrion Lannister shouldered through the door, feeling almost tall. Five members of the king's small council broke off their discussion suddenly. "You," his sister Cersei said, in a tone that was equal parts of disbelief and distaste.
"I can see where Joff